podcast brought to you by New Cardigan. Our September Cardi Party was held at the Royal Historical Society of Victoria, a community history organisation supporting local historians, researchers and students since 1909. Director Kate Prinsley, Collection Manager Christine Worthington and indispensable volunteer Sophie Schilling took us on a tour of the building and talked to us about the history of the RHSV and its future. Thank you so much for coming along tonight. We might get a few stragglers, but we are on a tight time limit. So I've just got a couple of things to mention. My name's Justine Hannah. I'm one of the New Cardigan Cardi Corps. Hugh Rundle is here as well, hanging about somewhere over there. So if you wanted to speak to us about anything New Cardigan related, please feel free to at any point in the evening. As always, phones on silent or off if you don't mind while our speakers are speaking. We are recording this event, so please bear that in mind when you are asking questions, but you can always just come up to me afterwards and I can use my magic editing skills and take you out. Also to please be mindful and respectful of others' privacy if you're taking photos for social media as well, as always. We don't normally do this and we will be making a full statement on our website soon, but tonight the New Cardigan Cardi Corps wanted to say to our LGBTQI colleagues, we are with you. To the New Cardigan community, vote yes. And to our parliament, just fucking do it. You know JFDI is our thing. So without too much more of me talking, I will introduce our first speaker and I'll mention the other two women that are here tonight as well at the Royal Historical Society of Victoria. So Kate Prinsley is the director here. We have Christine Worthington, collection manager, and Sophie Schilling, I was told that your title is indispensable volunteer. So I'm going to let Kate talk you through a bit of her background and what she does and give us an overview. So take it away, Kate.
First of all, thank you so much, Sophie, really, for inviting you all here this evening. We're delighted to have you here, and I'm wearing my cardigan. So you're very, very welcome, and I hope that this is just an introduction to our collection tonight. We're going to race you through like an Olympic sprint, and that you'll come back and visit us when you've got a lot more time. So I'll just give you a little bit of background about how our collection began. We started in 1909. By the time we began, the State Library had already begun, the museum had begun, and the art gallery had begun, and as of the fashion in that period, you know, they collected the biggest, the best, generally masculine history, and there was no place for the history of ordinary people. So what happened in 1909 was a man called John Houston gathered together a few people under the portico at the State Library. I love the visual of this. One of them was a man called Petherick, who some of you may know has a library or room named after him at the National Library in Canberra, and another fellow whose name is just I've forgotten at the moment, and they decided that they would start collecting the memories of ordinary people. Houston, I might add, had been in America, where they were very good at collecting sort of, actually they were very frightened of industrialization and immigration, and they wanted to collect what they considered to be true American stories, whatever they might be. But so it was slightly xenophobic in some ways. But anyway, so that's what they wanted to do. They wanted to kind of collect the memories of ordinary people, and so they started a campaign, and they got historical societies. They started things called substations. The first one actually was in Yarram, believe it or not, to go out and collect the memories of ordinary people and get them to give them to these societies. Our first meeting was in Miss Furlow's music studio in the Block Arcade. Again, I love the visual of this. And our true patron was Jessie Webb, and some of you may know Jessie Webb from the Jessie Webb Library at Melbourne University. So she was our true trooper, but she couldn't become a member of our council because, of course, she was a woman, and we were very male. And the good thing about Jessie Webb, she was actually an archaeologist, and she was very interested in primary material, and so she was particularly conscious that we should collect primary material, even though she came from a different sort of discipline, and used that. And I think that really encouraged people to start collecting, because really Australian history was so new, people were looking at really what other people had said. So it was a kind of new, it was like a kind of growing of age, of coming of age, that primary material was very important. So as I said, we began in 1909, and we had a very clever way of building up our collecting policy. We said to people, because we were quite posh, if you give us your collection, you can become a member. And so we had the prestige of belonging to a society, but also we got their papers. And of course, by then, there really had been a first generation of successful, and again, less successful, people who had come to live in Victoria. And of course, their children weren't interested, as is the nature of history, and so they gave us their papers. And that's how we built up our collection quite rapidly. And again, with our library, we had Petherick as our sort of founder, and he had a good, as we say, if you'll excuse the pun, he gave our library a good spine. You know, he kind of realised where to start collecting. So that was that. And also we collected images, and I'm going to show you those later on too. At the same time as we did that, we also started up this network of historical societies. So we are today a historical society in our own right. And we're also the peak body for historical societies throughout Victoria. And we all sort of, in a way, replicate our own sort of ways of doing things. And we collect local history, and we want to tell the stories of local stories. And so I hope some of you will end up being local history librarians. And so I really hope that you kind of work closely with your local historical societies and support them and encourage them to get their material out. We were just talking, we represent GLAM all rolled into one. So as you can see, we're a gallery, we have an exhibition. We have about 4 exhibitions a year, although currently we're actually only doing 2 because we're a bit worn out. But we do exhibitions which are always open to the public. We have a library space that you'll see in a moment. We have an archive, which again you'll see, and we are also a museum. So we are the whole kit and caboodle, which is lovely. Is there anything else I need to tell you? Most of our users are researchers, so we get a lot of people. You have to pay to come and use our collection. You can be a member, which is $70 to become a member, or we charge a day fee, which is $16.50. And of course, we encourage people to be members because we say it will be a bargain. Most of our people that come and use it are academics, family historians. We don't get many school kids, sadly, particularly family historians, genealogists. We have suddenly gone on to Trove, and suddenly we're getting a lot of university students, which has been fantastic for us, because I think prior to that, these people weren't coming to use our material. So we are thrilled with what's happened and what is happening for us. We have programs, we have lectures, we have walks, we have produce a journal. We're a very active group. So, you know, it's a very busy place, which is lovely. So what more can I tell you other than we're going to go on some tours, and I know that you're all here for a quick look, and we hope it's an introduction, an aperitif to what we do, and that you'll come and visit us again. It might be a bit squishy in parts. Okay, so this is the library. And we've got 2 research rooms here that our volunteers use. Our volunteers, we've got a set of volunteers that do commercial research, usually for developers, because they might have to research a parcel of land before it's developed to make sure that there's been nothing significant on that site that might need excavation. So that we carry out that research commercially. And we have... The library collection is a hodgepodge. Everything is by donation. We receive material from people's personal collections. We receive entrance to the Victorian Community History Awards, which are very prestigious, and they're going to be announced at the Arts Centre during History Week at the end of October. So we receive all of those items, which are often quite unique because they might not really hit the mainstream. We have material that other societies donate to us. We have just received a couple of really big donations from other institutions. We've accessioned a large one from the Public Record Office recently. Apparently, who knew they had a library, but they had a little reference library and they decided they didn't have room for it anymore, so sent it all over here. And also the Genealogical Society of Victoria recently had to downsize because of the rent they were paying in Collins Street, and they're now set up at a great little place in Queen Street, but they didn't have room for all of their collections, so they've retained part of it and they've donated quite a lot of it to us. We've prioritised family histories and Victorian history up here, and we're processing that gradually, and I'll take you downstairs to where our library stacks are and the rest of the GSV collection, so you'll see what a big job that will be. We've also got files of pamphlets and ephemera and other articles. I think in this job is called collection manager, and I think that we've had people from history world and museum world in this position before, but never a librarian. So the library's getting a lot more attention than it ever has, I think. And I'm gathering that material together in a traditional vertical file by subject so that we can easily find things. Prior to that, it had been in a straight numerical order in cabinets and nothing really user-friendly about it. So I put out a call for some library technician volunteers recently. It's apparently a bit harder to get a job as a library tech these days because there are a lot of library techs looking for experience. And so we've got about 8
library technicians that come in every week. Since we moved to the cloud catalogue, it's opened up our cataloguing, so we've got a lot more hands on that work now, and we're progressing through really well. And we're able to introduce some standards into the catalogue as well. Obviously, when your records are going to Trove, you want them all to be perfect, but unfortunately, our old database had a lot of volunteer help over the years, and you've got different people who are doing it in a slightly different way, and we're now, I think, able to start controlling those records a bit more. The archives over here, the manuscripts, as Kate said, in the early days they had people writing perhaps a piece about their early life in the colony or their voyage out here, and in exchange they would get a membership. When this archive started, there was the State Library, but there was no Prov, and the State Library wasn't collecting manuscripts. So, in fact, in the very early part, we got the papers of George William Rusden, we got the papers of Turnbull Brothers and Mollison, and some of these important sort of pioneer people. But yes, it's sort of once the Prov started collecting manuscripts and the State Library, we tend to get more of the everyday things here now, documenting ordinary family life. Although we do get some interesting collections. We recently got the archive of Taylor's College. Because it wasn't a government institution, there was really no sort of mandate for that. And it didn't sort of technically fall into, I think, the category of the business archive that the Melbourne Uni would have taken. So, and we ended up with it. So we do get some treasures in there, and we've got some great students working on indexing that material for the catalogue as well. So some of the other things we've got in there are the original case books of Judge Willis, who was the first long-term magistrate in Victoria, and that material was recently digitised and turned into... there was a history of the Supreme Court written, and a lot of his material went into that. So, yeah, we've got some real treasures in there, and it would be worth jumping on the catalogue, which Sophie will talk about when you're in her group, to have a look at what we've got here. So I'll take you quickly downstairs now to visit the armoury. This building, by the way, was originally a military drill hall. It was built just prior to World War II, hence the beautiful Art Deco. You can see our lovely clock. And so it is very big and airy. We've got air conditioning. The images is obviously at the back, so that's not so subject to temperature. But we know that our conditions here are not quite ideal. We've had a preservation needs assessment done of the manuscripts area, and we know that there's some work that we can do in there to try and increase the lifespan of those items, but we're working within limited resources here. We have 3 staff and all the rest are volunteers, so no gold taps for us. So this half of the building is used by the Victorian Concert Orchestra, and they have a number of sub-tenants as well, including the Maydowns Dancing School, and you should hear them tapping on a Saturday morning. Oh, the Melbourne Pipe Band, and there's a number of choirs that come in and practice in here. We would love to have scored some more space in this building, but we're sort of sharing it. And you can see it's pretty much the same as the other side. Just like on our side, you can see that the doors are half doors because they were dispensaries in the days of the military drill hall. And where we're going down to is what used to be the armoury, which is where all the weaponry and everything was held down there, the ammunition. So it's basically like a big vault.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Oh, my.
Just be sure to mind the step there.
Oh, the smell.
Yes, yes. Just wait for everyone to come in. That little room next door there, the Melbourne Pipe Band have got it set up. They've got all their memorabilia in there, and they've got a little bar, you know, and they have a wonderful time here. So this room, we've only sort of had the usage of it from relatively recently. This donation from the GSV was coming in and we had literally nowhere to put it. At the same time, they were having ballet classes in here twice a week, May Downs, but it was determined that this room was not good as a public space because there's only one door. And if that door gets shut and you don't need a key to shut it from the outside, you can't get out. And I don't know, I've never tried to make a mobile phone work in here when the door's shut. I prefer not to think about it, actually. So this is not a public space. If GSV members, they're still accessing the collection until we've finished processing it. And we've undertaken to keep anything that we're not going to take and give them first dibs on it before it's disposed of. There's a lot of material here that we won't take because it's kind of international in nature. But until we go through that, we'll just keep coming down here and retrieving items for GSV members when they come and visit us to do research. And we've also installed some shelving here so that we can accommodate our stacks. We had a lot of items, large sets of things, and a lot of things that had been hanging around for years, government gazettes and things that we could... It's nice to have a place where you can bring everything down and still keep it on the catalogue and be able to use it, but get it out of the way.
I had no idea that there were so many little areas here.
It is a rabbit warren, absolutely.
So how long has the Historical Society had space here?
Only for the past sort of decade and a half.
Okay.
And prior to that, they were at the Mint building.
Right.
Before that was sold. Now, our tenancy in this building is not 100% assured. We're still in negotiations with the state government about how long we can stay here. We believe that a long-term lease is on the cards. It just hasn't been officially drawn up yet. That at one stage, there was talk about the RHSV becoming the committee of management for this building, but unless the building is in 100% condition, you really don't want to be taking that on. So the state government is kindly disposed towards us. They've just completed, or that will be finishing later this month, I think about $100,000 worth of renovations on the building. So we've had some leakage fixed and some work done on the facade. And so we'll just keep our fingers crossed that we've got long-term tenancy assured. But I think it is progressing that way.
Great. And you're digitising the GSV collection or just cataloguing it?
No, we're just cataloguing it. Most of it is pretty well secondary sources. Some of it, or a lot of it, is not mainstream because family histories don't tend to be mainstream. The manuscripts, on the other hand, we are digitising. We're sending those off to AMS Imaging to be digitised, just a couple of boxes at a time. It's a very slow process, but as Sophie will tell you about Archive Matica, we're setting up a repository to receive that digital material.
Oh, great.
Yes, and we hope to make more of it available online one day.
How long has the Society been here in this building?
In this building, about a decade and a half or a bit more, between 15 and 20 years, yeah. Prior to that, it was actually owned by Lindsay Fox. He used it for years. He put this lighting in because he used it to display his classic cars. And maybe when he bought it, there was some proviso that he had to sell it back to the government if he ever wanted to do that. So they bought it back off him and moved the RHSV up here.
Is the history of this building documented anywhere in your collection?
Yeah. There was a conservation management plan done years ago, and there's a pretty solid history in there.
Is that on your website?
It's not. It's one of those old sort of 1980s conservation management plans. You know, might have been a Gary Vines or a Nigel Lewis site. We've certainly got a copy in the collection.
So general members of the public, how much is it to pay to come in and use the collection?
Right, members research for free. People who just want to use the collection for a day, they pay $16.50.
Okay.
So mostly people will have a shopping list of things that they want to do so they can get their value for money and squeeze it all into one day. Mm-hmm. Yes.
How many members do you have?
We've got, You know what? I'm not exactly sure. Kate would be able to tell you. We've got 340 affiliate groups, and then we've got an individual membership component on top of that. Now, there are individuals that pay the full, I think it's $70, but then there are members of affiliate historical societies who might then join as an individual as well, and they pay $50. So I can't tell you how many individuals we've got at the moment. We certainly, I think over recent years, like most historical societies, you do see a little bit of a decline in membership. But we haven't faced the same sorts of challenges as, say, the GSV, where, you know, online services are definitely cutting their grass a little bit, you know. So we've still got quite a bit of unique material here. We receive a lot of online inquiries. One of our volunteers is a researcher that comes in once a week, and she deals with those general inquiries that come in by email. So that might just require scanning a document and sending it off, or at least letting them know what we've got on a topic so that they'll know whether it's worth their while coming in. Other times people will sort of let me know in advance, I need this and this and this, and I can have it out for them and ready to go. Because I'm part-time, I may not be here when they come in, so, yeah.
Does copyright impinge on you at all?
No, we tend to monitor the copying facilities behind the office door. We're happy for people to bring their camera in and take photos of things, you know. The images people, I think, are a little more concerned about copyright. They if someone's going to bring their camera in and take a photo of something, then they'll say, leave the flash off, you know. And there are forms that people can fill in to, you know, for rights to use and to order copies.
So is everything in your collection owned by the Historical Society then?
Yeah, donations become the property of the RHSV, yes. And our donation paperwork reflects that, yes.
Great. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Mm. Yes. There is I have to say, we do have, because we have a historical society component of our membership, there are still some societies that are not very convinced about the merits of digitisation and not very convinced of the merits of online sharing, you know. And so what we hope to do now that we've moved to the cloud catalogue is to get more of the image content on there and show societies how you can actually generate business and generate revenue by doing that. Mm. We do these History of Victoria support group seminars every year. We go out to the regions and hold seminar days on various topics that we believe are of interest to groups generally, and that might include management and succession planning and that sort of thing, but also collection care, and digitisation is something that we hope to cover more of and set a good example for them here. All right, so what we might do is library people switch over this way a bit, and then we'll let you guys through to the images.
Freezing in here, so it's my joke. Good for the objects, terrible for the people, but you know, it's great for things, film, glass plates, all that, to have a very, very cold environment. So poor old volunteers that come in here freeze to death, but never mind. We've got the priorities. Anyway, as you know, the history of the city, it was paralleled by the history of photography. Photography grew at the same time as Melbourne, and so Melbourne is very well documented. And we, as I said, began in 1909, and we were the first organisation to start collecting photographs. So we predated the State Library, collected in that area. They have collected very well and have probably a far better collection than us now. But at the time, we were first cab off the rank. And so we collected photographs of the city. We're very strong with glass plates, positives, negatives. We've even got little things like tin types, which are things developed onto tin. A beautiful collection. We have digitised for preservation. So underneath here is a lot of digitising. Digitised for preservation, but not digitised yet to put up on the website, or not putting our scans up on the website, which we hope to do in due course. But our catalogue is up there anyway, so you're very welcome to get an idea of it, but the images themselves aren't quite ready to be put up. We also have collected paintings, and I'll just show you these. We wouldn't do that now. We would have a collecting policy where we would be a lot more careful about what we would collect. But at the time we used to take paintings, and here you can see some of these. This is our picture of the Victorian Navy, and of course you would never, these pictures, these ships would never have been all together at the same time, but it's just a lovely image of the, all the ships at once. And this is probably one of our most iconic image paintings that we've got. We also collect works on paper. We've got lots of lovely drawings. And I particularly want to show you something that's my favourite, which are these Marstead maps, which are here. I couldn't actually find for them. Find for the previous group, but today, I mean, this time I can. These were insurance maps, and they were done by a company called Marstead. And what they used to do is they'd go around to all the buildings in the city and see how, every year, and see how they had changed. Like, if a wooden staircase had become a metal staircase, or a wooden picture frame, or a wooden window frame had become a metal wooden frame, well, then the fire risk was less, so the insurance changed. So these maps would be updated every year. And they're just fantastic as a resource to see how the city has changed, what was on each block, all of those. Personally, I find them quite fascinating, and I wish that people would come and do research on them, because it's one of these great pieces of resource that's underused. So, you know, they just tell you all about, this is the corner of William Street and Flinders Street, which isn't too far away from here, and they're quite, you know, to scale, you can see how all these buildings were put together. And they're just, you know, they're layer upon layer of different pieces of paper where people just used to stick things in to show how the insurance value had changed. These actually, all these maps will be different, but a set of maps is up on the State Library website. So you can go and have a look yourselves later and just see what a great resource they are. And I'm desperate for someone to do some work on them. It would make me very happy.
And what years?
Well, they're from, I don't know what year they stopped, actually, but this one is, I wish you hadn't asked me that question, because I don't actually know. This one is 1913. So, and I'm not quite sure when they begin, and I'm not quite sure when they end, but they don't make them anymore. But at the time, they were as insurance maps. So they're fascinating. And there's something that I'm very fond of. I don't know what else I can... Oh, this is something else that's nice to see. These are the drawings of Jane Cannon. Jane Dorothea Cannon. I'll show them to you in a minute. As you know, Melbourne grew very rapidly in the 1850s, and there wasn't enough houses. So they had to import houses, you know, like prefabricated metal houses. And she was the wife of one of the companies that brought these houses over. And if you look here, you can see some of her beautiful drawings. They're completely special and unique. And the one that I particularly like is this one, actually, which is Gertrude Street. So there, many of you probably know Gertrude Street. And there you can see this, you know, you know, really... And by no means a remarkable woman who has made this, left this remarkable legacy of what Gertrude Street looked like. Because it doesn't really look much different still. So that, I think, was done in about the 1840s. And another one that's really lovely to see is... I wonder which one it is. Yes, this one is from... This is actually Lonsdale Street, believe it or not. So it's extraordinary, isn't it? Mm. Like, it's quite residential. Yeah. But just gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. So all the detail. Mm. And some of them you can actually see the metal houses that she came, that they built. Actually, that one, you see people living in a tent. Let's see if I can find one that's got a picture of the houses. Oh yes, there's it. There you are. They're what the houses look like. And actually, you can see these houses in South Melbourne. There are three. There's a little terrace of them in South Melbourne, and they're little tin houses. So that's the sort of thing. This is in Richmond. So that's the sort of material that's in here, and it's just lovely. Principally, though, we've got photographs, images. So that's mostly what we do. And as I said, there's available for people to come and do research. And one thing that we have done is we produced this lovely book called Remembering Melbourne. Which was looking at some of our, top pictures of Melbourne, and they're now in a lovely book which you can buy if you like. But that's what happens here. The most remarkable thing about here is it's all run by volunteers. So volunteers, you know, catalogue, digitise, make these beautiful boxes, or everything's bespoke, and conserve and preserve and make things accessible to you all. And we love people to come and do research, so you're very welcome. Yeah.
Okay, shall we go upstairs?
Yes.
All right. Good.
We'll follow you.
Through this way.
Did you need to run off?
I will now.
Okay, yeah. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
It was just wonderful to hear those and see those images as well.
Yeah, you're very welcome. We do hope you'll come back. You can only get this
brief overview.
It's a starter kit. So welcome everyone to what we call the speaker's room. This used to be the officer's mess when it was a drill hall. Has anyone spoken yet about what this building was before it was the Royal Historical Society, that it was a drill hall and medical quarters for the army? Yep. So this was the officer's mess, but we call it the speaker's room now, and this is where we have sort of our seminars. We had one on Melbourne Day on the 30th of August, and we've got History Week coming up, so no doubt there'll be something in here every day. But normally it's only used maybe once a week for us. And then there's a dance school that has lessons up here. You would have walked through part of their school. They have lessons up here on a Saturday. So what I'm going to show you is our catalogue, our new digital archive, and a bit about sort of where we're heading with this. So the way I started off here was through placement for my university course, and I was asked to research sort of digital archives and come up with a suggestion for software that we might use. And we settled on Archivematica and Access to Memory. So one does the sort of digitization process and checking, and the other is where you access the images. They're made by Artifactual, and it's open source software, and I'm not sure if anyone has any experience with using open source software before. It's great because it's free, and we were warned that it would need a lot of IT support. We weren't quite aware how much. And the support that we've had has been absolutely fantastic. It's been really good, but it's taken a little while longer to get it up and running than we expected. So it's actually only been up and running for a month now. It's very, very new. So what I will show you is, this is the old catalogue that was run sort of through our website, and it used DB Textworks InMagic. I'm sure someone here will be familiar with InMagic. It's very good. There are better things around now for our purposes. This is the advanced search screen, and it has three fields. So yeah, not so advanced. So this is our new one, eHive, and it's all cloud-based, which is what we like. We want to keep our servers for, you know, nice things rather than, you know, our metadata. So this is eHive, cloud-based, and what I'm going to show you is something from our manuscript collection. This is the collection of Alexander Fullerton Morrison, who was sort of just a man about town in the 1800s. You know, rub shoulders with a lot of famous people. And this is the catalogue record. I should say as well that there are only 6 paid staff here. 5 now. Only one of them is full-time. We're run primarily by volunteers. So all of this catalogue was written by volunteers. Kristen is a volunteer coordinator and just does the most amazing job of keeping the quality of our catalogue. It's just amazing. So this Mollison collection is in 11 boxes in the manuscript room, which you just saw. Or 12 boxes, excuse me. So that's eHive. At the moment, it's got our manuscripts, it's got some of our vertical files, and it's got our book collection. The next thing to go in there will probably be our images. It's very gradual. And I'm sure Christine would have mentioned to you before that we've just started being harvested by Trove, which we're very, very, very excited about. So 30,000 records on Trove now from our book and manuscript collection. So that's eHive, our catalogue collection. And then this is Archivematica. So this is the open source software that I mentioned. We don't do the digitization ourselves. We do some of it if it's for exhibitions, like a really quick thing, or if it was for our Remembering Melbourne book, they did the digitization for that themselves. But we get another company to do it. Don't ask me who it is because I can't remember their name. And then what they give us is a compact disc or a thumb drive, and neither of those are particularly stable. So we're trying to get these through Archivematica as quickly as possible. And basically what Archivematica does is runs all of these microservices on the files. So what does it do? You can bundle in all the metadata. It creates checksums to make sure that the files aren't corrupt. It changes the files into a preservation-friendly format, so not something that's under license, something that's open format. It examines everything. It creates a dissemination information package and an archival information package. So it's based on the OAIS model, which some of you should be familiar with. And then once Archive Medica runs it all through, it links up to ATOM, which stands for Access to Memory. And this is where you can actually view the files. So in our opinion, there wasn't really much point in just having Archive Medica because you couldn't actually see the files, but that's what everyone wants. At the moment, Archive Medica and ATOM are both only accessible on site. That was because the only source of income for the Historical Society is memberships and purchasing of images. So we don't want to be giving anything away, if I can put that in quotation marks. So all the digital images are only accessible when you're on site, so only through our server. So this is what one of the ATOM records looks like. It has all the same metadata as the eHub record. So this is the same record, the Mollison collection. And you can flick through and see all the images. So I think it was this one here. Yeah. See, these are letters to Alexander Mollison from Charles Joseph Latrobe. And I think Christine might have mentioned to you as well that the reason that we have such a great manuscript collection, it was almost by accident, because RHSV was around before the State Library collected manuscripts and before Prof collected manuscripts. So everything kind of just came to us by default. We were the only place that was collecting them. So yeah, from the 1800s and early 1900s, you know, we're the ones that have really, really nice manuscripts. So yeah, this is just a collection of letters from Latrobe to Mollison. Does anyone have any questions about the collection? Ripped through that quite quickly.
So have you got like a budget each year for what you're sending off to digitise?
Yes we do. Yeah, we're doing it fairly slowly at the moment because we're a bit worried about having everything digitised and on CDs and on thumb drives without actually being able to process it. This project, we've written the procedures and everything so that our volunteers will eventually be able to use Archive Medica and process all the images, but at the moment it's a slow process and we're checking everything, making sure it works, and making sure that the servers are stable. We've got Linux running on them for the first time to run this software, so was one of the many hurdles of that process.
Well, so I have one more question. When you say like working with the open source, like mm-hmm. what's your experience? Like, have you got someone as part of your team that does that work, or is it sort of like the community that work on that software that do the support?
We have an IT company that there are contractors for IT, so they maintain our website and do server maintenance already, so they were already doing that and installing this software, the Archive Medica and the Access to Memory. And since then, we've looped in another company in Perth. So Artifactual is a company based in Canada. And as far as we know, Gaia Resources in Perth are just about the only company in Australia that like really know the Artifactual software, and so they've been working from Perth helping us here to get it up and running. Yeah. At first we were having trouble with Archive Medica and ATOM actually talking to each other, so the images were being uploaded but they weren't showing up for some reason, and don't ask me what the reason was because I don't understand the IT stuff.
In terms of your collection and ongoing collecting, is there a similar focus? You're doing it very similarly where like members might leave their
yep.
journals or whatnot,
yep.
or is there some sort of other focus, or is images a focus?
Yeah, we get some estates and we get a lot of people just coming in with stuff. And we don't take it all on, but we normally recommend somewhere else that they can take it. But for the most part, yeah, we're building the collection. It, as long as it's significant to the history of Victoria, or, you know, Victoria currently, if it's significant and will be history one day, yeah, we'll collect it.
Great.
With items like this, how deeply do you catalogue the nature of them? Like, you'd probably say this is a letter from somebody to somebody, but did you mention something in the letter, or if there's anything about the context?
At the moment, as we're changing from InMagic to eHive, we're also reading all of the, like, checking all the records as well, and putting in more information. So previously they hadn't included things like extent or the actual sort of content. And another thing that we do to better describe the content is we have some volunteers who, so we've got some that sort of manage the collection, we've got some who do cataloguing, we've got some who do scanning in the images room, but we've also got some who just write articles for us. So on our website, every now and again there'll be an article published, and that's always by a volunteer. So they might have a particular interest in something, and they'll go through and read everything. They might partially transcribe it and put that in with the catalogue record as well. And someone in the previous group asked if we were going to do any sort of transcription or anything, and at this stage, no. We're just sort of managing the digital archive at the moment, but that would be great one day. I know I have heard of crowdsourcing, you know, transcribing from even overseas. The organisation at the museum, the Biological Library, Biodiversity Library of Victoria, something like that, they put some records online. The ASA did a seminar a few months ago. They put some records online on the Monday night, thinking, oh, maybe a couple of people have a look at it. And then they got to work on the Monday, opened it up, and these people from all around the world, just because they had these images up on Flickr or somewhere like that, had transcribed the whole lot.
Wow.
The entire thing, yeah. So that would be great to do one day. But again, like I said, the RHSV's main source of income is from people purchasing images and from memberships and from research. So if we were to put those up to be sort of crowdsourced and transcribed, that would be, yeah, giving it away, as they say. It's, yeah, it's a catch-22. Biodiversity Heritage Library, that's what it was. There you go.
How long have you been a volunteer here?
I started volunteering a year ago in September as my student placement. And that's turned into a position here for me working on the digital archive. So it's been a year, and it's a really nice place to volunteer. There's people of all ages. So if anyone is still a current student and wants somewhere to volunteer, it's a great place to come and actually do some, like, meaty work and actually put your name to a whole project. I think that's really important when you're a volunteer. So, yeah.
The eHive catalogue, is that accessible to everyone?
It is, yes.
On the website?
Yep, so the eHive, if you go to the RHSV website and go to collections, and if you click search the catalogue, eHive will come up. So that's our main catalogue now, except for images, but that's next. So eHive is accessible to anyone, anywhere, and our actual digital collection is only accessible on site. Yeah.
Well, if everyone could just join me in saying a wonderful thank you both to both of our beautiful speakers and for your time. So thank you very, very, very much, Christine and Sophie. That was our September Cardi Party at the Royal Historical Society of Victoria. You can discover more about the RHSV at their website, www.historyvictoria.org.au. We hope you've enjoyed this live recording and would love you to review us on iTunes. It does help other people to find out about CardiCast and lets us know we're on the right track. Keep an ear out for more CardiCasts. Check out our website at newcardigan.org for more events. And remember, folks, JFDI.